Welcome to this week's Inside OSU podcast. I'm Burns Hargis, president of Oklahoma State University. We're about 7 months away from the grand opening of our world-class performance hall, the McKnight Center for the Performing Arts. In 2016, Billy and Ross McKnight generously funded a $25 million endowment for the Performing Arts Center. Ross and Billy have always been so generous to Oklahoma State, and this Performing Arts Center will be a lasting tribute to that generosity. Even though the first official performance isn't until October, there is still a lot going on at the McKnight Center as it prepares to open its doors. This week, the McKnight Center is presenting its second annual Chamber Music Festival, and this weekend, season tickets go on sale for the 2019-2020 season. With me today on the podcast are Anne-Marie McDermott and Mark Blakeman. Anne-Marie is an internationally renowned pianist and the artistic director for the McKnight Chamber Music Festival. Mark is the Carl and Marilyn Tomei Executive Director of the McKnight Center for the Performing Arts. All right, so welcome, both of you. We're thrilled you're here. Mark, give us the construction status of the McKnight Center.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So we have been under construction since January 2017, and the building is coming along wonderfully. We're on schedule and on budget. I do take every opportunity I can to remind our construction team that we have a hard stop. We have the New York Philharmonic coming in October, but the work that's happening now is mostly on the inside, and so you really are starting to see very much what the McKnight Center will look like when it's finished, because they are doing that important finish work. So a lot of tile is going in, restrooms are being finished, a lot of the finish treatments on the walls that are very important for the acoustic design of the different performance spaces are going in as well. So it's very exciting to see it come along, and we should be substantially complete in about around May, and then we'll go through our process of commissioning a lot of really technologically advanced systems, which will take a little bit of time working with the designers and our team to train them so that they understand how to operate all of those theatrical systems and audio video. But it's very exciting.
So both you and Anne-Marie have been in a lot of performing halls. You all over the world, and of course you were with Oklahoma City, Nashville, Tucson. What's unique about this hall? What's unique about the facility?
Well, I think Mark is probably more well versed. To me, what's unique is the location of it and the scope of it. To have a performing arts center on this scale with two concert halls in the facility. Very different halls with very different personalities. One is going to be a smaller, more intimate chamber music hall, so that'll be very up close and personal for the audience. And then the main stage, which will be very glamorous, very powerful, and the fact that this is being built here in Stillwater, Oklahoma, it's just mind-boggling to me. It's incredible. But I think, Mark, you're more informed about the details of the spaces.
I would just say that I think that the unique features are the intimacy of the entire facility.
Yeah, you've told me before that it's 100 feet from the back seat to the front of the stage.
100 feet from the back row to the edge of the stage in the performance hall. So very short from end to end. We have 1,100 seats, which is less than half of what you'd see in most performing arts centers. So we just will be able to deliver a very personal experience where you'll see world-class artists in this very intimate environment, and we'll use the technology to enhance the experience of the concert goer by using video screens and things like that.
Anne-Marie, I've just got to ask you, I mean, you really are, to have somebody of your acclaim here in Stillwater helping us with this is just wonderful.
But thank you.
Certainly I'm interested, and I think our audience would be interested. How did you get into this profession?
How did I get into this profession and why? Such good questions. You know, my first motivation for wanting to become a pianist specifically was my mother took me to a concert when I was about 4 years old, and I will never forget the image on stage of a big shiny black piano under a spotlight. I have no recollection who was playing or what they were playing, but I just remember thinking then that this is the most glamorous and the most powerful thing, and that I wanted to have that kind of power. Now I've grown up, and learned that it's neither of those things, glamorous or powerful. But I'm so deeply grateful for the life that I have as a musician. And, you know, to me, a career as a musician is really defined by its longevity. You can have a career for 10 years and do great, but to have a career that lasts decades is what I'm striving for. And that entails creative thinking about your career and what you're doing, your choice of repertoire. And,
you got to watch your physical ability as you age.
You do have to watch your physical ability. I'm very, very careful about that, actually. You know, very similar to what dancers do when their schedule is very intense. When I'm in recording sessions, what I'll do at the end of the day is ice my arms. And just preventatively, it's just a good idea. But, you know, the other interesting thing to me about my career is the different avenues it's gone down. You know, 15 years ago, I never would have thought I would be an artistic director. It never entered my mind that I would do that. I'm a piano player, but then opportunities came before me, and I remember talking to my dad about it when I first was thinking of accepting an artistic directorship, and he said, just go for it. And it's been a thrilling addition to my life as a musician.
Talk about that a little bit. Yeah. Most people probably don't really know exactly what an artistic director does, and how do you put together like this week's Chamber Music Festival?
Well, I mean, you're asking me as if I know what I'm doing, but no, I'm kidding.
well, just so our audience knows, you are the artistic director for Bravo Veil, which is one of the most successful festivals in the country, or maybe the world.
And it's a big festival, a 6-week festival. Yeah. You know, what it entails, I feel very strongly, my job number one is the artists who I bring, that it's a very specific environment when you're doing a festival, and by that I mean a limited period of time and you're doing quite a lot of concerts. So you have to put together a group of musicians who like each other, who have really good chemistry, both personally and professionally as musicians, where you communicate really well, where I always say to people, you know, classical musicians can come across as so serious, but really half of a rehearsal is very serious hard work. The other half is a lot of acting like 2-year-olds. You know, and it's important that you have the balance of both, that you are having a really wonderful time.
Because there's a lot of communication that goes back and forth between the musicians.
Both verbal communication and eyeballs, right? There's a lot of that, and even some grunting and breathing in, and you know, all of this is very important. Then repertoire is critical. To understand your audience, we don't operate in a vacuum. So, and I've learned this from being at Bravo Veil, that you have to really listen to your audience, and never ever dumb down to your audience, but try to carefully bring your audience along with you with what you're doing artistically. And really make a case for why you're presenting the repertoire you're presenting. You know, and then the joy of putting together rehearsal schedules, and I'm being facetious.
Yeah, of course you are. Well, you know, Mark, your end of this is kind of the business end. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of just finances that go into these things.
Lots of moving parts to all of this. You know, we're very fortunate that Ross and Billy McKnight feel so passionately about world-class artists, because their gift to support our program fund is what really has allowed us to start our Chamber Music Festival, to bring the New York Philharmonic in, and we'll reveal our full season lineup for our inaugural season on March 2nd.
This weekend,
and our season's chock full of, you know, incredible world-class talent. And we're just very fortunate that the McKnights, you know, that's their passion, and they got involved very early on with this project. But there are a lot of moving parts.
Well, one thing that I'm curious about is you're a musician, and you've run performing arts or symphonies. Do you all collaborate at all on the repertoire?
You know, I have to just say, you know, I'm in awe of. Mark and the work that Mark has been doing, because it's one thing to be an executive director. It's another thing to be an executive director for a brand new performing arts center that hasn't opened up yet. Hasn't even been built yet. I mean, that takes some real vision
and faith
and perseverance and patience and all of that. So, you know, I do, Mark came up with a great idea for next November, when the Chamber Music Festival will be in the McKnight Center for the first time, and which I loved, an idea of, well, why don't we present an all-American program, which I hadn't thought of, which is a really wonderful idea because Veterans Day follows shortly after, right? So yes, Mark allows me to do my job without restrictions, you know, other than operating within a budget, obviously, which I'm very appreciative of. But, you know, always we do talk through the programs and, very importantly, who the musicians are going to be.
Successful arts organizations, the executive director or the CEO and the artistic director or music director have to be partners.
Yes.
And really have to collaborate. And when that doesn't happen, bad things occur.
Yeah, you know it.
And so, we're very fortunate, you know, that we can. And I know enough about music that we can have those conversations when we need to. Certainly. Want Anne-Marie to have the autonomy to put the programs together that she feels like will be really compelling. But it is something that we talk about, and it's important that we're on the same page as we move forward, because we have to marry a lot of different things together to make it work for everyone.
You know, absolutely. Yeah.
This project was really modeled after the Michigan model that they have at the University of Michigan. They bring in, of course, the New York Philharmonic every year. And then it just went from there. Once we had a $50 million programming endowment, things really started to happen. But I'm just curious, is this kind of thing unique in academe, or are we catching up? What's the...
I think the fact that we have a programming endowment is hugely unusual. And very few facilities open with any type of endowment at all. The fact that ours is earmarked for amazing programming is really spectacular, because it really speaks to the kind of investment that the leadership behind the project wants to bring to the community. There are certainly other performing arts centers on university campuses across the country, but they don't have the intimacy of 1,100 seats, and they're not going to have the opportunity to program at the same level that we can program at because of the endowment that we have.
And because of that endowment, too, you have the sustainability into the future. And that, yes, then that really is extraordinary. I don't know if
I know this week you're going to have a program for students.
Yes.
How do you select the repertoire for that, and what are you trying to teach the students?
It's just the greatest joy doing these programs for students. I always feel like
students, I mean really the elementary and
what grade are we having this year?
We have all fifth graders from Stillwater Public Schools coming tomorrow.
Which is incredible. Mark focused early on making this happen, and it's so important, and I always feel, you know, if I even get through to just one kid, I've done my job. Right? So I try and select the repertoire to familiarize the fifth graders with all of the instruments that we have here. They may not know the difference in size between a violin, a viola, a cello. We have a flutist this year. To try and do shorter selections, because when you have a whole room, gigantic room full of fifth graders, you have to pay attention. You have to keep their attention, should I say. And then there's a great trick that I like to teach kids. It's really a little bit selfish. And that is, you know, you ask the kids, well, what do you do when you really love a performance? And they all start clapping. I say, that's great. Now, what if you really, really loved it? And they'll clap, maybe they'll stand up. And then I say, if it's just the best, what do? And I tell them, I say, you scream bravo. So you see, I'm training the future audiences. So then you do that, and you're guaranteed for the next hour. You do anything, and they're going to all scream bravo.
Bravo. Oh, that's just great.
It's fun.
Mark, you mentioned that you're announcing the season on March 2nd, Saturday?
That's this Saturday.
And people are obviously going to be curious about how they get tickets, and can they get individual tickets?
So this Saturday we'll announce our season lineup for our inaugural season at the McKnight Center. We have 24 performances spread out among two different performance spaces in the center, and we've got a variety of programs. We already know that the New York Philharmonic's coming, and they're going to present multiple concerts and do a residency, but we have another world-class orchestra coming from Europe. We've got a small Broadway series, a major jazz act from New Orleans. So we really are trying to provide diversity. And after Saturday's announcement, people will be able to go to our website, mcknightcenter.org, and check out everything that we have programmed. We'll start to sell tickets at that point. We're selling them in packages right now. So if you're a lover of symphonic music, there'll be a package just for symphony orchestras, one for Broadway, and so on. Later this summer, we'll start selling individual tickets. So if there's one specific thing you want to attend, then you can watch for our single ticket on sale that we'll announce later. And we have our box office ready to go starting next week, and that number is 405-744-9999.
I want to thank our guests, Anne-Marie McDermott and Mark Blakeman. You can find out more about the McKnight Center at mcknightcenter.org. And you can watch the season ticket announcement this Saturday at 2 p.m. live on O-State TV. I'm Burns Hargis. We'll be back next week with another edition of Inside OSU Podcast.